The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
A choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expanding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
Welcome to Expanding Reality. I am your host, Brandon Thomas. On this incredibly awesome episode, Kelly Harding joins me to talk about some strange-ass history, y'all. The Cabbage Kids, the orphan trains, all the postcards, the Admiralty, and how it ties into your sovereignty. Guys, this is one of the coolest conversations ever. Now, there is a visual element to this. She has a whole presentation prepared. So check the link down in the show description, not only on how to contact Kelly and to tell her how great this was, but also for the video version of this episode so that you guys can take full advantage here. Now, if you want to check the links down there as well and support your favorite show with the Patreon link, that's how you can get access to the afterthoughts and the hangouts that we're doing and all the extra content. Now, in this particular afterthought, we go really balls deep with it. Mappa Mundi, we talk about Jesus in Japan, God is the devil in the Bible, all kinds of stuff, guys. So you're definitely going to want to catch this one. Again, a great way to support your favorite show. But for now, and without any further ado, let's get to this incredibly cool conversation with Kelly Harding. Welcoming to the show, we have Kelly Harding. Kelly, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Brandon?
I'm outstanding. Thank you so much for asking. It is so cool to get you on this show right here. You have a phenomenal presentation for us. I'm very excited to introduce you to the audience. You know, I've known each other for a while now, and I'm grateful for our relationship. We consider you family around here. So it is so cool to be able to present the work that you've been curious about, and you have a fascinating mind and incredibly cool insights on stuff. So again, can't wait to introduce you to the audience. Now, your email is going to be located down in the show description. Guys, check that out, as well as the video version of this. If you're normally an audio-only audience, that's totally cool, and we appreciate you as well. But there are some visuals associated with this show, and the link will be located right down there below for you just to hop on for free and check it out. But if you want to support, the Patreon link down there is hanging out as well, and you can come join us for these hangouts. You can get the afterthoughts, which you and I have a banger afterthought for this one planned, so definitely join us for that as well, guys. Again, down in the links below. But for now, we've got this incredible young woman here with this badass thing, so again, check the video version. Kelly, in your own words, you mind just telling us a little bit about yourself for that audience that may not be too familiar?
I'm Kelly. I'm a Seattleite, third generation. I'm a mom, and I'm super interested in hidden history, the old world, mud flood, Tartaria. That whole subject totally changed my life. And then I've gotten really into etymology as of recently. So like digging into words and their origins and what they mean and how that can be used to kind of hide our reality or trick us in certain ways. And I like want to share a lot of that with you guys today.
Absolutely. And you study film and photography as well. So guys, when she said she studied this, she has got pictures of her on the beach digging red bricks out of the sand and noticing things. And you've gone through what, the University of Washington's archives,
yeah,
right?
Digital
and
archives. Mm-hmm.
You were the first person that put ancient Photoshop on my radar. And so when I talked to you about that, you were just like, hey, do you know they were knew how to do Photoshop back in the 1800s? I'm like, what the fuck? And you've literally gone out and studied this stuff. So again, grateful that you're here. Where would you like to start? Do you just want to go for it?
Yeah. I'm going to pull up my PowerPoint here.
Hell yeah. She's got a whole visual associated with this, guys. Check the link down there for the video version.
Hey, what are you doing? We're doing that one. Yes. Okay. Here we go. How does that look?
Perfect.
We're going to talk about cabbage. I brought my cabbage here.
Props. Yeah.
So we're going to go over the history, the etymology of the word itself, and then the symbolism and connection to Admiralty Maritime Law, which is a revelation that I had. And this is really what I wanted to share. So let's get going. Let's go to the next slide here. So just to start out, I mean, okay, I'm going to try not to backtrack myself a lot because there's multiple different subjects that I'm going to be marrying together. So bear with me if you're like, why the fuck is she talking about cabbage?
No, the importance of the callback, we are always reverent for. So please take us on the ride. We're here with you.
Okay. So the history of cabbage is interesting because unlike most vegetables, animals, plants that were cultivated and domesticated in the Mediterranean, cabbage is one of the plants that was domesticated in Northern Europe from sea cabbage. And it's one of the brassica family. So that's also, what do I have here? Brussels sprouts, kohlrabi, cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage, kale. They're all in the same family, but they were all cultivated from the sea cabbage, which is actually this plant back here. And some 3,000 years ago, so a long time ago. And yeah. And I also put down here that none of these words, the original words for cabbage are col, like, or call, and none of them are French. And I say that because most of what we're going to be talking about has to do with old French and French history. So col, call, cowl, cowl, cowly, none of those are French. However, it becomes cabbage in the mid 15th century from old French cabos or caboche, which means head. Also cabochon, if you've ever seen like a cabochon, like a polished stone, it means the same thing. It means head. Spanish cabeza. The root word is the Proto-Indo-Euro caput, which means head. And then caput forms all or some of these words: cap, cape, capital, captain, cattle, chattel, chief, decapitate, and mischief, which I spelled wrong, but that's okay.
And caput, when you caput somebody. Oh man, he's caput.
Yeah, he's done
for. Yeah, he's to end. Did you draw this image, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal artist as well, guys. So there you go.
I did. And then over here, I found this very interesting, but cab and cap pretty much mean the same thing etymologically, but and they're flipped. They're almost mirrored. Like if you just flip it and the A is a lowercase a. So, you know, your little as above, so below type thing. Mm-hmm. So old French means head. I mean, it makes sense. It kind of looks like a head, right? A head of cabbage.
Yeah.
And then I was looking up any other words that start with C-A-B-B. And the only other word that starts with C-A-B-B happens to be Kabbalah, spelled with a C. Which I was like, okay, let's just note that one. And cabbie, which has to do with a taxi cab, right?
Ooh, then if you go to cab. Distribution of people.
Oh, yeah. There you go. They're moving around. Right. We're getting into that. So cab comes from cabriolet, a horse-drawn carriage from suspensions that were very springy, like the leap of a goat, because capriola means a goat or a kid or a goat. So that, I found that interesting. And then cabin is a hut or a small house. Also the room of a ship, especially for officers, and also an airplane. So airplane cabins, ship cabins, tiny little cabins in the woods. And then we've got caboose, which is a ship's cookhouse or the last train car. And I find I think it's funny. But if a captain is eating a cabbage in his cabin, then he's a head in the head eating a head. I crack myself up.
The you got to get into words, and we're nerds enough to love that. So thank you. Yeah. And I didn't know caboose was what the ship's cookhouse was. I just thought that it was strictly relegated for the last bit of a train. So thank you. Yeah, I'm already learning shit. Thank you.
And then cable, which specifically in the root word comes from a strong rope or a chain used on a ship, about 10 inches in diameter. But then it comes from the Latin capere, to take, to seize, to grasp, like captive, to take captive. So That's interesting too. And then I put the little visuals over here because I kind of get, if you put all these things together, you kind of get an interesting little visual.
Yeah.
Of like a cabin in your head. You're being tied up by a goat. I don't know, something like that. Some sort of ancient mystical.
Yeah.
Who knows? Right. All right. So moving on. Why am I talking about cabbage in the first place? Cabbage babies post the cabbage baby postcards. This is what it comes from. So Mind Unveiled is, they have a channel on YouTube. And I, when I first learned about Tartaria and stuff like that, I found their YouTube channel and went down the rabbit hole. They actually started looking into these because they were looking at old world Photoshop. And these are like this one here and this one here are actual photo manipulations, really early photo manipulations from the late 1800s, early 1900s. And then they just found so many of them that they were like, what the fuck is this shit?
They're so weird. I'm going to link Mind Unveiled down there. I'm going to link their YouTube channel for you guys to check them out. Mary and I watch them around the house because of you, by the way. And we watched their breakdown of the old world Photoshop, and it was fascinating. And they just had thousands of these. One. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I started getting into this too, and they have probably three, five, seven videos on this sort of thing, the cabbage baby phenomenon. Trying to figure out what this means, where it comes from, like, what are they talking about? One, these are all old French. So they're French postcards at the turn of the century. But looking into the symbolism, we've got babies being plucked out of cabbages. In these ones specifically, you've got one guy here, he's watering them. And then we have next one is the man with the red striped stockings. Selling them, one of them basically, to a lady in red and her husband. And looking into the symbolism here, I did notice that it's similar to the French flag or a French sailor's outfit, which usually is like the blue and white striped top. But then the American flag and the French flag have the same colors, so I don't really know too much about that. This guy's had his hand in his pocket, so I don't know if that's like a Freemason thing. Just trying to dig into it.
Yeah.
But I do like back here, this one has a train. So are we transporting these babies? There's like, you know, this little trail comes right down to where they are. I don't know. But yeah, there's babies and cabbages. And then these are the water babies. So there's different series of these postcards. And actually, Mind Unveiled wrote a book. And I have it right here. And it's all about the cabbage babies. And they have a huge collection of their postcards. And they categorize them. So there's all these different categories of these crazy, weird baby cabbage postcards. These ones are the water babies. So this is the lady in red, and she's plucking them out of the water, scooping them out of the water here. And then here she's fishing them out of the water, which I found very interesting. So this is water themed. So we've got cabbage and water. And then next we have the storks, which we're pretty familiar with from our own history. Like, I think that the stork thing was still popular through the 50s, I think. I'm not entirely sure. But here we've got storks delivering babies. And the symbolism here is that the stork is the mailman, because back then you could actually send children through the mail. So he's the deliverer. But you can see here, this kid wants to go, doesn't want to be in the water, because they're in the water. They're hanging on to lily pads and stuff. And then the stork's picking them out and delivering them to their families. And then here, these are children for sale. They say for sale. This first one says for sale together or separate. And then this one says baby for sale. And there's cabbages here. So disturbing. Like, I look at that and I'm like, this is weird. Like, I don't like, that doesn't make me feel like this is adorable or something. This makes me feel like something's off.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. And the red pinstripes that they're wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like the guy's socks. Like, what is that about? But I feel like a lot of it's kind of sold to us or kind of passed off as like, oh, well, you know, they just thought babies were cute. It's a joke. But I don't know that it was. I don't know.
Well, it makes me think, too, the American flag, right? I mean, that's relatively new with the country, right? And all of this happened turn of the century, allegedly, with these world's fairs and things where the orphan trains were training these kids and it was so readily available. And that was such an interesting period of time to be able just to go pick up kids. Yeah, they just hang them on socks on the wall. You can just go grab them. And though the tie-in, though, to the colors as well is the red, white, and blue. It's almost as if our entire country is this. You know, we were these babies in these colors. And so it only makes sense that they wrap us in those colors for our country as well. It's sort of, you know, reminiscent of what this country's built on is that foundation. So it's like the tapestry of the flag is all of this, is these souls or these babies or whatever that, you know, were distributed to populate this country. It's really weird. Mm-hmm.
It is weird. I definitely believe that a lot of our history is hidden and they do have to tell us, and they have told us, but they've told us in symbols and through things like this. And so decoding that is, it just makes my brain happy, but at the same time, it's creepy as hell. Like,
yeah.
So next, this is one of the multi babies. And I've seen this postcard with names written on every single one, which kind of gives you the idea that maybe it's not just a composite early Photoshop manipulation of a bunch of baby photos, but maybe they actually had names. They were being sold. Like, maybe.
Yeah, it's like a catalog spread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, oh, it's just a postcard you send to your friend, but maybe it was like, okay, I'll take that one, you know?
Oh, look, that one's got the same name as your grandfather. We'll take that one too.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
And so, and next, this is actually what's on the cover of the Cabbage Baby book. And it's a really nice, I mean, like so much work went into, because these are all different photographs of children and they go all the way back here. So that's a lot of work went into that one.
Yeah, they had to size them for distance and everything. Yeah.
This one on the right, I tried to translate Jean qui pleure, and it's something like who is crying, I think, is what it translates to. But I find it really unsettling. Like, why? Yeah. I don't like it. I don't want them to be crying. Why are we doing that? Like, why are they sad?
And the colors are just gross. Yeah, like, it's,
they're all redheads. Kind of weird.
Oh yeah,
like why would someone find that, why would you make that, you know what I mean? I'm a mom, so for me it's extra disturbing, I think. Yes. You know, because like if before I had kids I'd be like, I don't know, they're ugly, like why? But like now I'm like, this makes me like feel bad. I don't like it.
Maybe I'm getting empathy from you because I don't like it either. We're not parents, but it's weird. Like nobody wants to see a baby cry, but then to have a shitload of them in weird colors, redheads.
Yeah, and they're obviously, like, it's tinted by hand, but, like, why?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, and then here's the babies on a train. There's a whole set of babies that have taken over cities, so it's almost like the cities are empty, and then all these babies are all over doing weird stuff, you know, hanging out. You know, what is this about? And I didn't translate this one, so I don't know what it says up here.
You know, and then think at carnivals, how they have the little trains for kids to ride on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I rode in one of those actually recently. Yeah. And then here's some other ones. Here's babies in boats, babies on a telegraph line. And this one is babies in a trench. And it says, I cannot speak French, so please forgive me. But this here where it says Tranche de la Grande Poilu, it means trench of the seed of soldiers. So they're the future soldiers. And on les aura means we will have them. So kind of insinuating, and then these cannons and munitions are their toys. So insinuating that these are the seed of the next generation of soldiers, like pretty overtly, really, which I found interesting.
Yeah.
And then the baby's on a wire. It's weird. I don't know. Maybe they're being sold via telegram. I don't know.
Another connection to birds, because you know birds sit on telegraph wires, and the stork. Maybe there's something to birds there.
Yeah. And then these ones are in water down here in little boats.
Maybe that simply meant you could order them by telegraph and then they would send one to you.
Moving on from all of those postcards from the turn of the century, like the idea that that was it and that they just, you know, it was just a one and done type of thing. Cabbage babies have been in our faces our whole lives. And it's not like, at first I thought maybe they like every 100 years they have to like bring it back or something, but it's not even that. It's been in our faces the whole time. people understand or people remember the Cabbage Patch Kids. They were huge in the 80s. Huge.
Oh, yeah.
And this is... So the story about the Cabbage Patch Kids is that there was an older lady that was making these dolls, and this 21, 22-year-old guy named Xavier Roberts bought the dolls and then turned it into, like, this through marketing and, like, factory, you know, creation, made them in these huge things. But I found every baby, Cabbage Baby, has Xavier Roberts' name on their butt, which I found really weird. And so I looked up, okay, what's the history of the name Xavier? Because that's kind of a weird name. Happens to be one of the first seven Jesuit priests.
No big deal.
Yeah.
On kids' butts. So. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll just leave that there for a minute. We'll probably come back to it. And then, of course, everybody remember Ann Getty's in the 90s.
My mom
everybody
loved
had these.
This shit. Everyone's mom loved
Everyone's
this
mom
shit.
Loved that.
God.
Everyone had a calendar. Everyone had the pumpkins and, I mean, just the tiny little preemies. And I remember thinking, oh, that's so cute. But now when I look at them, I'm like, it's creepy.
Yeah.
This one's not so creepy. It's kind of cute. But, like, the tiny little preemies, like, laid out in flowers and stuff, it's like, why are you doing that? It's weird. Mm. Just hold them, please.
Yeah, could someone touch that baby? It needs human contact.
Yeah.
I'm sticking it in.
Not leaving props. Vegetables. Yeah. So there's some more symbolism. And then these I found anthropomorphic Japanese porcelain cabbage children, tea sets, and things like that from the 50s. Very interesting. Wow. I did learn that Xavier, the Jesuit, was responsible for bringing Catholicism to Japan. Or something like that, or to that area. I don't know if that has anything to do with these, but why are they? They're all, like, little porcelain, like white porcelain or cabbage. So, like, they're not
Jesus
Japanese.
Jesus is buried in Japan. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the afterthought. Go ahead.
I like it. Thank you. I can't wait. All right. So then I decided to look up if the Bible mentions cabbage. I just got this random thought about, well, first it was, what does the Bible say about eating bugs? And then I was like, well, if we're on that, what does the Bible say about eating cabbage? Well, it turns out then the Hebrew word for cabbage and cherub are the same word. And this goes on to talk about how the etymologies are completely unrelated. However, I don't like to believe necessarily what I'm told online, mm-mm, especially about etymology. When I'm diving down an etymology rabbit hole, I look at multiple different sources. And then some things I just go with because they're not going to tell you everything. So, and if you put it out there in the universe, sometimes the universe will just give it to you. And you're like, oh, okay.
You can present what you want and then just do your best with the insight that you have, you know, with the information you've got. But that connection is gross and awesome at the same time. Awesome you made it, gross it exists.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, what does this mean? Because actually, they don't talk about cabbage specifically in the Bible because they didn't have a word for it yet. But so I was like, okay, well, what are cherubs? What is a cherubim? And these are three things that I thought were interesting. So the cherubim are angelic beings associated with the worship and praise of God. In Genesis, it says, after he drove the man out, he placed on the east side of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword flashing back and forth to guard the way to the tree of life. And before his rebellion and fall from heaven, Satan was a cherub. So that, I'm like, are we symbolically being told that babies are Satan?
Yeah, and it's almost like you're born of the devil and then you need to, like, I don't know, righteous your way out of that shit kind of a thing, you know?
Are we in the aftermath? Are we all, you know?
This Satan season idea is something that's been coming up a ton. Have you heard about this? Because it's in the Bible, the Satan season right after the apocalypse, right? And then, so some people would say then that what we see with the ancient society that we're talking about, actually before the society we're talking about, that one was the Jesus is, like, running around just fucking finger guns and high fives everybody, like, magic.
Yeah, the thousand
bells.
Years.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, this thousand year thing. And then we're actually in this afterthought of it. And it's Satan's job to just kind of run around. So it's interesting. So do we, like, I don't know, we can go deep into that. I won't spend time on it, but it is interesting, the correlation between that and what we find.
Yeah. And then the depiction of what a cherub looks like is it's totally symbolic. So in some, they say it has two faces, one of a human and one of a lion. And the earlier version is that a cherub has four faces, a man, a lion, an ox, and an eagle. And then they are often depicted in various forms, including as throne bearers in the heavenly host, holding up the vault of the heavens where God's throne sits. And this reinforces their role as spiritual beings in maintaining the order and structure of the cosmos. So, yeah, I don't know, other things to think about. This little picture is, you know, a picture depiction of a cherub. But then you also get, like, you know, the floating babies, you know.
Yeah.
Which is what probably we're used to. But more and more, I feel like recently...
They're laid out as sort of like a head of cabbage with the leaves coming out of it, you know?
Right. I was thinking that too. Super interesting with all this symbolism coming out of it. I don't know. So, but really before his rebellion and fall from heaven, Satan was a cherub. That I was like, light bulb. Okay. I don't know. I'll go with that. And now we're going to dive into something completely different. The nautical, the naughty, naughty nautical. I had to add that. So another thing that I'm really interested in is Jordan Maxwell and his talks about maritime law and how we all think that we're of the land and we're, you know, land of the free, home of the brave, that the Constitution applies to us and that we have rights. But he talks about how actually due to basically tricking us with words, we're all actually in the water and we're under maritime law. And maritime law is completely different than the law of the land. And the crazy thing about maritime law, because I have a book and I've been reading about it, is, and even if you just know anything about maritime in the world in general, is most words have another meaning in maritime that have nothing to do with the word that we think that they're associated with. And so if all words have two meanings, or most words have two meanings, and we don't know the other one, we can be tricked with them. Right?
Yeah.
And you know how people talk about double speak? Like, what does that come from? From 1984 or something like that? I don't know. I've always wondered what that means. And I've heard people on little videos describe it as like, what makes the bad seem good? And it makes like things like that, but they don't actually explain what it is. And I think this is what it is. It's having two definitions for a word and you just don't know what the other one is.
Yes.
Like, but they don't want to tell you that because you're not supposed to know that. So just throwing it out there. I would never off myself. So if anything happens to me, it wasn't me. So I don't know if I'm supposed to be sharing this, but I'm like, hey, people need to know, I think.
Absolutely. And we appreciate you.
So this is the whole reason I wanted to come on here, is because while I was looking for a book on maritime law, I found a book on cabotage law. And it is the law of the sea or air, and it dictates how a foreign nation or country can transport goods to another country and move those goods through that nation or country. Cabotage, not to be confused with sabotage, or right. It might be cabotage, right? But any word that ends in A-G-E, age, it's like camouflage, sabotage, massage, they're all French. So you could even call this a cabage if you wanted
to. Cabage.
A cabage. So this blew my mind, and it opens up the whole world of what these cabbage baby postcards might be telling us. Is what if we're all just cabotage? We're all owned and we're being, you know, transported across water and then sold. And I when I was first reading about this, I thought it just had to do with water, but it actually has it's for air, water, and land transport. So even though it's maritime law, it does include train and moving things across land as well.
So plasma is your only way out,
I suppose. Or yeah. I wonder if it tunnels count. I'm not sure. I don't know. Yeah, plasma is your only way out. Hmm. So Cabotage. And this is from my friend Maddie, because she goes, every time you talk about Cabotage, I think of the song by the Beastie Boys. Yes. And I was like, yes. And that's how you should think about it.
To remake it and just say Cabotage, but then have all yes. of the words be absolutely relevant to what you're talking about.
Oh, I will. Mm. Just like I redid Panama with Pareidolia.
Yeah. Oh, this is amazing. Yes. Your album drops soon. Very good. We're in anticipation of it.
Yeah. So in theory, it might seem a little bit difficult to figure out what this means. But like, if one country wants to come to another country and they have a boat full of goods, these are the laws that dictate how they can come to a port and offload those. And it pretty much dictates that you can't move within a country as a foreign country selling goods. You have to unload those goods, and a country with flying that flag can now transport them through the country. But when it comes to air, it's a little bit different. Like, foreign air can fly a plane to our country, but they can't. There's different ways that they can go about leaving and coming back, and like how they go about doing that.
Yeah, sort of like foreign sailors will have to stay on the ship. Like, they can't get off the ship, but they can bring all the stuff to port. Other people can unload it, but they can't step foot off. That
yeah.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the term cabotage is borrowed from French. Look at that. So caboter means to travel along the coast. So cabo or cape, they mean the same thing, right? Cap, cabo, cape. Also, just throwing it out there that I think that the fact that people keep using no cap as like a term now, I'm like, I think it's the collective consciousness is ready to hear this, Brandon.
I love that your etymology stretches just so far, although ancient as you can find it, up to the most recent slang. Thank you so
much.
Well,
you know, no cap comes from the 1940s, actually.
I did not know this. It came from 2 years ago when my nephew stayed with us, who was 15. That's how I found out about it.
If you're capping, you're showing off, or in theory, like, you're lying about how much money you have. So now if you're saying no cap, there's no cap on how much money you have. You're saying you promised, you're not lying.
Right. It was a no lie situation. But yeah. I didn't know why. You weren't lying about it. I thought it was just anything. Okay. It's the ceiling under which you can be capped financially is what that means.
Well, that's where it comes from. But nowadays it's been recycled to mean I'm not lying about anything.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're like, I'm serious. Like, I'm really not lying. No cap.
There you go. So for the parents out there of, you know, high school age kids, you're welcome. I mean, we got this offering
up.
So much, Kelly.
I don't
Thank
just
you.
Know this. I'm old now. Anyway, so this is Cabotage. This is how it works. And this is a really great publication. It's for free online. This is where I read a lot about Cabotage because it's from the American Maritime Partnership. It's for free. It's a PDF. But it comes from French, and it looks like French cabotage was probably the first set of rules to govern this type of thing. And then it became British maritime. And then most countries, if they didn't have any cabotage laws, they just kind of adopted the British cabotage laws. And so most countries abide by those set of rules. But there's some differences in different countries. But that's pretty much what it goes over. Pretty interesting. And this is the late, great Jordan Maxwell.
Shout out.
And please go watch his videos because they're amazing. Jordan Maxwell says, this is getting into what this cabotage has to do with us and cabbage babies. And I'm just going to move this over the side so I can read it. So Jordan Maxwell says, the Uniform Commercial Code or maritime law is based on Vatican canon law. And this is what we are actually under. We think that we're under the law of the land or the law of our country, but the Constitution and whatnot, but we're not. He says all ships are female. Women have pregnancies, and infants have infancies. So a ship pulls into port into its berth, and the captain presents a certificate of manifest to the port authorities or the dock tender to show how much cargo is on the ship being brought to and sold within that country, which actually is cabotage, right? When you're born, you come down the birth canal through your mother's waters and you are given birth to. The doctor receives you as manifested. Why do we call physicians doctors? I don't know.
Yeah.
You need a certificate of birth to show the corporation your value and your worth. You are owned. You are a resource. Your birth certificate is printed on security papers. There are red numbers on those security papers. Those numbers are a stock exchange number. You are stock. Your social security number is a bank account number. The certificate has your soles on it, the soles of your feet. Why do doctors take prints of the soles of your feet and put them on a birth certificate? You never, ever again in your entire life have the soles of your feet printed. So why do they do that? Unless they're taking your soul.
I mean, so gross. It's so gross because they're tiny little baby feet, you know?
Yeah, I have my sons, and like, because they give you a copy of them, you know? Like,
here's your receipt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Thanks for selling me your child. So
this is empowering, not depressing, folks. You know, if this is your case, and there's ways around this, and this is why it's empowering.
Because this is the only way we can escape this matrix is by understanding how we're being held in it. Yep. So I find this fascinating. And also, I know there's going to be so many people that are like, this is absolute bullshit. That's fine. But if you keep going into it, it keeps getting more and more real, especially if you look at what like Brandon Joe Williams is doing with the, you could call it the new sovereign movement, or I'd call it more like the state national movement, because they're really doing it. They're really removing themselves from the corporation and this. So, and getting real rights back. So look into Brandon Joe Williams. And his website is what? One Stupid Fuck? Is
that it? OneStupidFuck.com, guys. Yeah.
Yes, look into that. All right, so your birth certificate, you can't have it. You can only have a copy of it. The original is owned by the Vatican, and it is sold on the stock exchange. So how much value you will have is determined by astrology and astrologers, and likely today by AI and algorithmic programming based on astrology. So they can determine by when you were born what you're going to do, theoretically. And that determines your value on the stock exchange. Every birth, I think, is worth $2 million. So you have, I'm like out of breath here. Sorry. I'm pregnant. Okay. So just give me a second.
You're doing great. You are doing great. That bump is huge. When are you due, by the way? It's just, I mean, a month
November.
Or two now?
God. Yeah. It's my second baby, Sif. Yeah.
You are crushing.
I get big fast now. But, so in theory, and this is just what I've heard, is that every birth is worth $2 million. And that money is in a bank account under your social security number. And there have been people that have tried to access this, and they have accessed it through opening like an E-Trade account and using their social security number as the bank account. And then the routing number is the manifest number on the back of your social security card, though it's in red, or the one that's on your birth certificate, same number. But they get shut down real quick. But if the fact that you can open it shows that it is a real account. And in theory, if you figure out how to do it right, depending on how the country is going at the moment, you can have all your bills paid by that account. So in theory, if your name is ever in all capitals on any bill, statue, it's your straw man. Mm-hmm. Right. So it should be paid by that account. And this is a really messy way of going into it because it's really in depth, but it's so worth looking at. So look into this.
You're planting the seeds. And guys, we have the Sovereignty Rangers, Sovereign Rangers collection over on Patreon, and it's totally free. You guys, all the videos on there are completely free. You can check it out, but we've just sort of organized them. So all the Brandon Joe Williams' videos are on there. I think Ryan Sprague has one in there as well. Leslie Hopkins, we just talked about a lot of sovereignty stuff. So we've got that all categorized under a collection absolutely for free.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes. Yeah. Go look at that stuff.
Well, this one will
change your life.
Well. So yeah.
All right. So going back to cabbage babies, orphan trains, that sort of whole thing, the Statue of Liberty, guess who gave us the Statue of Liberty?
La France.
Oh. Right?
It's like, oh.
Now, Mind Unveiled goes into how they believe that the Statue of Liberty is actually Diana of Ephesus, which is, or Artemis. So we're talking about fertility goddess. Like this whole cloak thing is covering up like all the egg sacs and all that weird, crazy stuff that's on those statues. But So I found it weird, and this is just me thinking to myself, why is it called the Statue of Liberty and not the Liberty Statue? Like, why? It just seems like an odd way of saying it. Like, we say the only other one I think I can think of is like we say the Statue of David, but other than that, everything would be the thing's statue.
Yeah, but even then we say Michelangelo's David.
Right, exactly. So why is it the Statue of Liberty?
I've
And
never thought to ask that question.
so I thought, well,
Fascinating.
what if it's the Statute of Liberty? Because a
Oh.
statute is a law. And if you're on a ship and you are given liberty, it means you're allowed to leave the ship for a while, but you're still under contract with the vessel under maritime law.
Oh. It's so gross how much sense this makes. You know what I mean? You're doing so great.
So this is the whole statue that's like, sure, you can leave. Go
Oh, and the
ahead.
story's about that there's a human like grinding machine underneath it. Like the base is so much larger than it needs to be, and it took all this extra time. And the people who developed it
It's
were
a
like, they
star
just
fort.
they told us to make it. Yeah, they told us to make it like that, and all this these things, and then all these smells and sounds coming out of it in the middle of the night. People reported,
I've not heard of this.
oh, it's a wild rabbit hole. Yeah,
Because it's on its own island, right? Or this is like a
and it's also
Mandela
a
effect
Mandela
is.
effect that it was
Yeah.
on Easter Island, on it, Liberty Island,
Ellis?
right? Ellis
Liberty
Island,
Island?
that's
Ellis
right.
Island?
Easter
Something like
Island,
that.
Jesus. Yeah, that's not nowhere near it. That's the Moai. Other statues, right?
Right.
That we just call Moai, not the statues of Moai. Very cool.
Right.
Good point.
But so if you think about it, it's like, something happens like the Great Irish Potato Famine or some sort of catastrophe, and then people are shipped across the sea, and then they're allowed to come populate, but if and they have to sign a they sign something when they get here. Just, they say it's, oh, it's just recording. We have to record that you came here. But what if they're signing a contract, to show that they're
Yeah,
like, you
that big
can't
book
really
that's open, where you can see all the signatures. What if it's like made out of human skin,
Well, and what if it's just a maritime logbook?
Yes, yeah,
You're
like
just
an
signing
inventory
out,
book, right?
but you're still under contract with the vessel. Does that mean, and then
Yes.
are all of their offspring still owned? Does that
Exactly.
have to do with what the cabbages mean? Is a cabbage baby just like someone laughing at you, being like, look, you're cabotage. You're just owned. You're just a thing. You and your children and your children's children. They're all just owned. You're not free. You can't own land. You don't have rights. You just think you do. It's the illusion of freedom.
Yeah, it's a better way to control the population for sure.
So then we moved into, I was wondering about French, if any French people ever immigrated to Ireland, because I was thinking about the Irish potato famine and trying to connect this all through France, because for some reason, all of this connects to French, and I don't really know why, but the postcards are French, the words are French. Okay, well, so this is the French history of exile and trafficking of children. So these are two points that I think are interesting. The Huguenots, I think that's how you say it. I'm not sure. If you're French, it's probably different, but I can't speak French, so
Good band name too.
they were a group of Calvinist Protestant French who were heavily persecuted in the 1500s and 1600s in the southwest of France. In 1520, about 10% of French people belonged to this group. Louis XIV and the Catholic Church tried to outlaw their religion for a long time, and many of them, at least 10,000, but likely many more, left and went to England, Wales, and Ireland. So there was a mass exodus of Huguenots to Ireland and England. So there we have a population of French people that, joined with Irish people. So thinking about then being immigrated to the United States, 200 years later, developed and mixed together. In the
Yeah.
1720s and 30s, the French forced exiles to immigrate to the Louisiana Territory by kidnapping children and young people off the streets of Paris, taking them from poorhouses and orphanages. They had a whole like police force for this. They were called the Bandoliers. They were kidnappers. They worked for the Mississippi Company. Some recorded 1,200 youths were shipped across the Atlantic without their consent. Many were paired up before or during passage to encourage families to form, and these kids were as young as 8 years old, so that would increase their numbers in the New World. They would just marry them together and be like, okay, now here you go. And that went on
Huh.
for at least 10 years, if not more. So maps, like maps a lot.
Love maps.
So I went, okay, we know that people speak kind of a Creole French in Louisiana, and then up in Quebec, they speak French. But like, what about the rest? And this this map over here, it, you know, it proves that there were, this whole area was French, New France, Louisiana Purchase territory. And I just have to say that I went through public schooling and I really didn't learn that much about France. I know, like, what do you know about France, like the history and in our country anyway?
The time period I was growing up in, we were taught to call the French pussies because of how they handled World War II. And so that's how they've been phrased for at least my generation of men, is that they concede, they give up, they're a bunch of, you know. And so honestly, not to consider them a threat, which is interesting. And then also to sort of band together them against them ideologically to think that they are lesser down. So we've been trained, honestly, if I'm objective about it, to not take them as a serious threat.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. We learned about like the Louisiana territory and then maybe like French, like fur trappers. And that, and was even pretty that, much it.
How it was phrased was, is they were down on their luck and we came in and saved them by taking it off their hands, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very interesting. But I did not know that there was like this much territory was owned by France. And they say that right here that it was only 15,000 people, but we don't know that, because it's saying at the same time that these 13 colonies in this tiny little area had a population of 250,000, which is weird. They could have just easily just walked all over these guys and be like, you're ours now. Like, I mean, they kind of, I probably just did, but
more likely. And it's interesting too, when you get to the Moors, and that there was actually a massive already black population here, and that really nobody was brought here, and that they were taken here from here to there. That's just fascinating when you really get into all this stuff.
Yeah, that is so fascinating to me. That and this idea that the Gulf of Mexico could have been the Fertile Crescent. And like, yes, if you go into like southern states like Mississippi, Alabama and stuff like that, and they have all this Moorish architecture and all the names of, you know, like there's, why are there so many cities named Nineveh? Like things like that. Or like Memphis. Alabama being all Obama. Mind freaking blown right there.
It's insane. The whole thing. It's everything is inverted. This backwards ass land, especially because you look at old maps and that they used to have east as their north. So everywhere that they would have.
Oh, I have not seen that.
Referenced east and north from. I'm going to pull up. I'll pull up a badass map, actually, in the afterthought here. But please continue.
OK. Yeah. I've never really cared too much about maps until like the last year. And I'm like, no, they're really, really important. And they're so cool, and they can show you so much different information that makes your brain open to new ideas and things like that.
And looking at how they perception manage your mind with maps. Modern maps use Greenland's huge, Africa's really small, so it's not even proportionate to land masses. So, and then also this southern hemisphere like ideal that all these poorer countries, or and poor Australia down there, there are the convicts, right? And so you just put them down there, they're below. And so even reference points for geography are highly important, and especially when it comes to maps and proportions and things, like I said. So that's an interesting thing.
Love it. And then, so I pulled this one up. This is the number of children who rode the orphan trains. And this is obviously, this is 1700 and this is 1853 to 1910. So this is a lot later. But if you kind of in your mind superimpose the green area that was France over this map, most of the kids that rode the orphan train came from the area that was green. Like if you just put it over the top, you see these numbers are massive. And these are the kids from that state that rode somewhere else. Because if you look here, this is like Michigan and Wisconsin area.
Okay, so the numbers on the image on the right are all outbound kids.
Yes.
Okay,
from number of children who rode the orphan trains. I think so. Let me see.
1910. Because that is interesting, because if it started, because we think this happened from the east and moved over, but it's fascinating if you think that there was a large population of children being moved in this Louisiana Purchase territory area, that would change the timeline a little bit. It would mean that the French actually already had more kids.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm
and how
at.
It increases. I mean, I'm looking at your map now, the 6,000, the 9 up there in the Great Lakes and everything. Mm-hmm. Dude, it dips exactly in that little, oh, this is gross, Kelly. It is so great that you found this, but oh my God.
So part of me is wondering if, like, if the cabotage thing was very connected to France, if maybe like France was the first to understand that you could trick people into becoming property through cabotage law. And then the United States picked up on it after slavery was abolished and adopted the whole idea. I don't know. And I don't, like, I know that the Vatican is in, where is the Vatican? It's like outside of Rome, right?
Yeah, it's its own city state. Yeah, it's its own thing.
So I don't know if they have like a massive control over France and they just don't want us to know. I don't really know.
Dude,
somebody out there's going to know.
Southern France ties into like the Cathars, the Gnostics, that story of Jesus. I mean, there's so Knights Templar. There's so much coming out of Southern France. And so, again, it's interesting that it's sort of gaslit against us to think of as no big deal. You know, it's
you think of Napoleon as being, you know, the Napoleon complex. You think of French people as being like, oh, like little like whiny mama's boys.
With tight striped mime shirts on.
And those are the sailor outfits, too. Those are French sailor uniforms.
Which is black and white, which is duality. All of this is so interesting.
And that's all I have, I think. There we go.
What an outstanding presentation. Like, that is so cool because I learned a ton, but I've got a ton more questions, which is wonderful. I mean, that's how these things go, right? But just your dip into etymology is fascinating. This is something, even when we pull up the latest PSYOP that will not be named here, you look at the dude's name that follows him around everywhere and pull the etymologies of these characters that are running around with these people in these PSYOPs, and you'll see that it's, like you said, it's being shown to us in plain sight, but in symbolism. This, yeah, again, Jordan Maxwell was great at talking about. And in fact, just as an homage, I was, you know, lucky enough to have him on the show, so I'm going to link his episode. It's 134, and he actually passed away he passed away one month to the day after we recorded our episode. And the whole story about it's wild, actually, how we got him on. But either way, Jordan's episode will be located down in the show description. Episode 134 is a thank you, as well as mine unveiled and your email, for folks to reach out and tell you how awesome you did and how badass this was and how everybody can't wait for more. So, did you have any more points that you wanted to make before we run into the afterthought on this? But you just did a fantastic work. What are you looking forward to? You know, where's this information leading you to next to investigate?
Getting more into like the French history, trying to tie that a little bit more because there's still some loose ends there. But for me, the whole cabbage postcard thing, that's been, like, to me, that's pretty solidified. Like, I figured that one out. But really, I feel like there's a lot of hidden history to do with France.
Oh, what do you think? Okay. Oh, my God. Because what's the biggest question about the orphan trains that you have? Hundreds of thousands of kids. What's the biggest question you have?
I mean, what was their home life like before? Like, why? Because you'd think that if they had a tight-knit family, they would, I don't care who, if you were 10 years old, you'd try and get back to your family. So what was going on that these kids are just so willingly like, all right, cool, let's just start in the middle of nowhere with no idea what we're doing, with no education, you know, let's do it. Like,
do you think it was possibly because they knew that they had nowhere else to go?
I don't know. That's the question for me. I know that, like, so Mind Unveiled does a really good job of going into the idea of repopulation, cloning, the incubator babies, things like that. But I'm trying to stay away from that just because, one, they've already done a great job on that. And I, like, personally, I think about, like, my dad watching this podcast and, like, you know, if I bring up something like that, like, oh, she's going into work, oh, we're clones, like, he'd just be like, oh, fucking, she's ridiculous, you know. So trying to stay on what we know. Mm-hmm. So we know that poor immigrants came over here, and we know that there was a lot of children, and they were shipped around. For me, the idea of cabotage and how they're considered cattle or chattel, or, you know, they're owned, they're a commodity. That makes sense for why they were shipped around with, like, not really given any, no thought to, like, how they might feel about it. you know, because they didn't really have rights. But the idea that they were farmed, I don't know. I don't have information on that, you know. It's definitely something that needs to be researched more, because there are lots of questions about it. It's like why did all those babies have red hair, you know? Or, you know, why were people just buying orphans, you know? I do think, oh, this is another point that I didn't get into, but the Catholic Church is very good at shame and guilt. And I think that, well, teenagers want to have sex. That's what they do. They're flooded with hormones. That's what they want to do. And it's human nature. And this idea that you cannot have a child unless you are married and a certain age and you're doing things the right way. And we're talking about a time when people didn't have much. So, but the shame was so intense and so complete that they were able to basically tell young women that were pregnant that you have to give the Catholic Church your child, because you're going to be ruined. You're just going to be a prostitute on the street because you can't have a child out of wedlock. And I think that that was a way to funnel a lot of children away from their families, especially if you grew up in like a village and like you, you know, didn't necessarily, you know, practice that religion, you know, and be like, why is this wrong? Why can't I do this? But shame is very powerful to control people
Massive. So. I don't disagree. My biggest question is, does it tie to, is the population boom, right? Is it strictly just a bunch of people getting guilted out of wedlock, or were there that many horny kids running around to where there were hundreds of thousands of kids that were involved in this program and this orphan train stuff? And then I bet it's interesting that you've got a French kind of scent to follow on this thing, because I have brought this up. That's why I got so excited about it, is I brought this up, the tie-in for the large population of children. I'm like, where were the parents? But then if you tie this back to perhaps the catacombs, right? And why are there a shitload of dead skulls and adults and human remains all littering these underground tunnels? I mean, maybe that's where all the babies came from. And let's say that these kids, maybe some of them saw their parents die right in front of them. And that's why they wouldn't have the inclination to go back home, because they knew that there was no home to go back to. So there might be an interesting thread. I may be way off here, but I just think it's interesting that you have a French connection to this. We have a shitload of dead skulls that were found, by the way, that weren't allegedly, they weren't placed there in the story in which they say it was. But then also you've got this French connection to a shitload of kids that just came up with no parents. I just think there may be something there, but I may be sniffing up the wrong trail, but I don't know.
Yeah. Like maybe there were a lot more people here than they say, because I mean, if you get into like old world architecture and things like that, like when they say that, you know, we built all these buildings in the early 1900s, like there wasn't the population to have done that.
The first insane asylum was like built for 400 something people, and the first residents were 27, and that was it. Like, why would you build something for 400 something people when you had 27 folks, and you had to gather a few of those from different places because there weren't enough in the town? Like that kind of shit. They were building these massive buildings for a population they didn't have.
Out of stone.
Yes.
Living in you know, in log cabins over here. But
yeah, they drove
the post office has to be this massive. It doesn't make any sense. And the horsepower and the water that the horses would need and all of that sort of thing. And they didn't have roads. And
power tools. It's a whole other rabbit hole. 1895, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll fact check that. But it's late 1800s until they had the power tools. And then when you put the I and J's in the dates, have you done this too and seen all that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
What do you think about that then? Do you think that 1,000 years, you know, this idea of the Dark Ages or whatever was what they've been saying as a rumor forever, just inserted, and then it never sort of was lived out?
That would be interesting. I think that it's, I mean, when you dig into history and you start seeing that everything came out of a certain time period, like all of these root words come from the mid 15th century. Well, why? It would take one generation to change the language. That's it. That's all it would take. Yep. So, and then all you have to do is backwrite the history. They don't know.
You know, and I've had fun with it, that it was a reset that was going to happen, and that they picked up aliens, right? Came down here, picked up a bunch of kids, and then let the reset happen, and then they dropped the kids back down. So that this is new population of perhaps hybrids, you know, kind of a thing. And that's a fun, you know, way to tie it into the orphan trains, because obviously that would have been flying around as well, right? If
it's a I brought up the idea that cabbage itself is one of the only foods that was domesticated in Northern Europe. So then all these babies are in cabbages Well, and they're all white babies. So is it like showing that those areas are hybrid or aren't, you know, are those the clones or something like that, you know?
And then when you talk about Pleiadians, they're always related to Scandinavians. They're always, oh, they're real Scandinavish or whatever. And then you have some Asian kind of qualities to some extraterrestrial entities as well. That's, it's just interesting when we start talking about this. And I was just speaking with Steve Falconer on a call earlier, and this dude was talking about that everything comes out of Ireland. And he was talking about the white bearded priests that were found in statues down in Mexico, you know, Cluclan. And then he also talked about these origins being up in Ireland, and that the real Mount Olympus is actually up there, and that our history is, they're sending us on a wild goose chase to say that it was foundational in Greece and Egypt. They want you to think that, but really it was all a bunch of white dudes far north. It's weird. It's, the whole thing is so interesting. This realm just continues to get tossed on its ass here.
Have you heard about the bald white giants from America and how, and like, there's crazy history about like really big white giant people that are, all the pictures of them or like the paintings of them, they're all naked. But there's a theory that George Washington was one of them, and that's why they were wearing wigs. Like the founding fathers were wearing, because they were all bald. They're part of that people, and then they were absorbed into us.
And then to think of people that shave their heads, you know, intentionally. There's something there. That's so interesting.
Yeah, Old World Florida goes into that a little bit, and I has good videos on
Old
on
the World bald Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So Dr. Narco Longo, and his page, his YouTube page, Old World Florida. And then he also goes into a lot of the Florida is the Garden of Eden, and the Gulf of Mexico is the Fertile Crescent. And like, that absolutely blows my mind. It's fantastic.
Well, then you got Coral Castle and all that going on at the Bermuda Triangle. You got a bunch of weird shit happening out there. A bunch of weird cryptids and stuff too. The skunk ape, you've got, Rougarou's out there. You have all kinds of interesting shit going on. Man, Florida. What a weird place. Yeah. You want to take a road? We'll do a road trip out there. We know a bunch of folks.
I really want to go see Florida now.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
We got a bunch of folks out there. We'll do something. You guys write in if you want to be a part of some little event that we do out in Florida. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Or if you're in Florida, write us in and say, yeah, man, come the fuck out. That'd be great. I did look this up, by the way, because I don't want the audience hanging on a cliffhanger here. The first modern power tool was the electric drill, and it was invented in 1895 by the German company C&E. So there you go. We all learned something new today. 1895.
That's if you believe that we didn't have electricity, though.
That's the other thing, right? This is the his story version of this. So you have tool marks and all kinds of shit. Drill marks specifically. So it's also interesting that the first tool would be a drill and not like a saw or something like that. I don't know.
Well, yeah. Or like, I don't know. I would think like an excavator. You know what I mean?
Something that digs real deep. And they're like,
or like a plow. How about a tractor?
I know people argue over the first thing they're inventing. No, don't invent that. You're going, you're wasting it.
You're wasting it. You have better things to be doing here.
That's right. Awesome. Well, dude, this is fantastic. I can't wait to follow you on your journey here. Of course, you guys check the link down there for her email, as well as the other things that we talked about, linking the Mind Unveiled, as well as Jordan Maxwell's episode. And just thank you so much. Now, you and I are going to go into an afterthought here. We have a few fun things to talk about. We're going to talk about Jesus in Japan, the liberty-based nonsense, why it smells. It's probably a grind machine. There's some fascinating shit on that. And as well, there's this Mapamundi thing that I'm going to show you. It's fascinating. It's got a head. We're going to go through it because it's just too fucking cool. And the one was destroyed in the 40s in a bombing. Anyway, okay. So we're going to talk about that in the afterthought, guys. Check the link down there to support your favorite show, as well as join us for that and all the other bonus content that we do. Now, Kelly, before we leave, if you don't mind, darling, we have a tradition here of asking folks what gets them up every day. So what gets you up every day to keep moving through this amazing realm that we find ourselves in?
Well, my five-year-old. He's just amazing. Just every day is just magical with him. The way he looks at the world, you know, every day's in a new adventure. Yeah. And he thinks rocks are cool and stuff like that. And so, you know, I think that stuff's cool too. So we just go adventure. It's great.
Do you want to take a moment here and thank that amazing woman, Kelly Harding, for coming by and dropping absolute knowledge bombs and new rabbit holes for us to traverse? Now, all the ways to communicate and contact and tell her that she did a wonderful job are going to be located down in the show description, and thank you for doing so. As well, guys, check out the links down in the show description so that you can sign up to not only support your favorite show, yeah, that's ancillary, but you get absolute access to all the expanded content that we do. All of the hangouts are there. As well, with the second tier there, you can join us for the live hangouts. You get links for those every single time we do them. We are doing many multiples a month and having an absolute blast with that. So check the link down there, sign up for that. And in this particular afterthought with Kelly here, we go balls deep into God being the devil, maybe, as well as we go into the Mappa Mundi and all these realm maps, these ancient realm maps that are super fucking cool. And did Jesus really die and is buried in Japan? We do all that stuff, guys, in the afterthought. So check the link down there. Again, a great way to support your favorite fucking show. That'd be me, mate. And thank you again for all of the support there. Now, before I let you run here, I just want to thank you all for subscribing, liking, sharing, and just being cool as shit, you know, as you're traversing this wild-ass realm that Kelly is absolutely helping us to discover is not what we think it is, and we are grateful for that. You guys, move on about your way and just be nice to folks that you come across. You have no idea what their day is going like. That is an immediate, but also maybe, you know, scoop up a piece of litter you see it there and just drop it in a bin, you know, where it goes, right? Not on the ground, all blown around in nature and shit. While you're just crushing it at life in general, get out of the fucking left-hand lanes. That's a pain in the ass. As well, and above anything else, go out into this incredibly wild realm, guys, and just be good to one another. Thank you so much for watching, listening, subscribing, sharing, and all the good things. We will fucking see you next time there.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy so you can protect stuff like this, or this, or even this. Well, case in point. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.